Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 127games.com. Welcome to Wargaming Recon. I am your host, Jonathan J. Reinhardt. Wargaming Recon is the only member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network to discuss historical and New England gaming. This is episode 120, Wargaming with Kids. For all of you listeners, new and old alike, welcome to this episode. I want to thank you for taking the time to join us for today's show. If you are new to Wargaming Recon, I want to say welcome to the party. Been here for quite a while, and I think you're going to greatly enjoy this episode. And for long-time listeners, you have probably heard episode 119, where I had the one and only Mr. Henry Hyde on as a guest. At the tail end of that episode, I had announced that my wife and I are expecting our first child, who will be born sometime in early 2015, February, January, thereabouts. So that got me thinking that it would be good to kind of talk about wargaming with kids, because no matter what we have, and we don't want to know whether we're going to have a boy or a girl, but whatever we have, I want to introduce them to wargaming in some capacity because they might enjoy it when they're a kid or something they could do with me, or even as they grow older, it could be a hobby of their own. And also, I'll talk about this more in the mailbag section of the show, but I had received an email a few weeks ago, right before episode 119 was going out into the airwaves for all of you to listen. And it touches on this topic. So for today's show, I'm going to highlight a few. I'm going to have a short list, really, is what it is. I'm going to highlight a few kind of suggestions and guidelines for those of us who might be wargaming with a child. Maybe it's our own. Maybe it's someone else's. We could be at a convention or a game day and happen to see kids there. Things for us to keep in mind when introducing kids to wargaming, and things for us to also consider when we're going to an event and we are wargaming with a kid, because that has to modify how we play. Not everyone is perfectly suited or prepared, really, to wargame with a child, because it's different. Obviously, since I don't have kids yet, I had to rely on experience of others who do that I've seen, and my experience wargaming with other people's children. And also memories I have of me as a child playing board games and all sorts of different stuff like that with the grown-ups in my life. So I used all of that to kind of work on this, and then I have some examples which I think are going to make it a little more accessible. Some of me just being like, you should keep this in mind, and oh, do that, and don't do this. And no one likes to be told what not to do or what to do, right? If someone came up to me and said, Jonathan, this is what you need to do, I'd be like, I don't want to do that. Why are you telling me what to do? You're not my boss. So hopefully these examples can show you ways in which different things can work and just stuff to consider. So let's start off with number one on my list. And it's a really short list. It's only three items. Number one on my list is simplify the rules. Generally, kids, especially nowadays, and I can't explain why it's worse now. I think it's a variety of factors, but children in general, of all ages, they have a very limited capacity for both attention and interest, and no matter what it is. Even if it's something like a video game, kids are only going to spend so much time with it before they want to play like a different video game. And if they're playing with a buddy and their buddy gets a little antsy, then they might get antsy and be like, I don't want to play this anymore. So when you look at something like a war game, a lot of war games, they are, of course, created by people who are older, I would say age bracket of 40 through 70, 50 plus most of them, I would presume. And they're intended for people who have really in-depth interests to get into the minutiae of stuff. Even if you're looking at something that's more simplified, like a Hail Caesar or a Black Powder, that allows you to really pull back and not have to worry about how much food a certain army unit consumed on any given day of a campaign, but you have that a more accessible set of rules. Even those could be simplified more when you're gaming with a child, because the child might not need to worry about things like facings Or is the charge going to hit a unit in the rear as opposed to the flank? What the differences of that are. They're not going to really care about the minutiae of, is this a rifle? Is this a musket? And I know that's even broader than saying, is it smoothbore? Is it, and so forth and so forth. What gauge is it? How many pounds of ammunition can that cannon shoot? The kid doesn't care. I mean, sometimes I don't care. But the kid is definitely not going to care. You can say, hey, you got a cannon here. They don't need to know it's a 6-pounder or a 12-pounder. Your cannon can shoot this far. And you show them how far. You don't say, your cannon can shoot 2 inches. Because if it's a really, really small child, they're not going to be able to do that. If they're older, then they might be able to, especially if they have an interest in it. So you have to know what type of audience you're going to be playing with. You need to know not just that they're kids, but the age range might be helpful to know. It's also good to know the kid if you can. If they're your own child, and you know that your kid is going to be someone interested in, say, tank battles, right? Because, I mean, what kid doesn't love tanks? And you, like, let's play this war game, and you have all these in-depth rules for cavalry, the child's not really going to care. They're going to be like, Mom, Dad, where's the tanks? So you need to simplify the rules so that instead of being like, this tank can shoot this degree, but oh, we're playing in late 1942, so really it has this different type of gun and they upgraded the engine. Kid doesn't care. Kid doesn't need to know. So make sure that when you are crafting both the rules or modifying whatever rule set you have for the situation, but also the general atmosphere and rules of your event, of your game, of your playtime, really is what it is with a child, you need to make it appropriate both to the individual kid if possible, but generally kids of whatever age range and experience you're hoping to attract. Using a convention, for example, because I've talked about this a little bit before on the show and have some experience with that. Some friends and I, we've run games at TotalCon, for example, which is a family-friendly tabletop gaming convention in Mansfield, Massachusetts, primarily geared towards like board games and role-playing games. We're one of the very few historical gaming events there. But when you submit your event to TotalCon, they want you to choose your audience. Are you doing a teach type of game? Are you going to say, you don't need to know anything about anything, really, but we will walk you through and teach you everything. Are you doing a game that's meant for experts, people who really know all the ins and outs of whatever particular game system or rules that you're using? Are you doing something in between, like an introductory kind of thing, where people need some sort of basis for whatever it is? They need to be familiar with board games. They need to be familiar with miniatures games. But they may not need to know your specific rule system. They need to know that rolling dice is important and common courtesies and all that sort of stuff. What is your audience? So when we do games, we don't do we'll teach you how to play. And we also don't set up our events for the really involved expert. We do that middle ground. And we also do it for a certain age group where we want like middle to upper teens and older. Because when you have an event for younger children, you need to have that different mindset. And I would say it's better if you are going to go to a convention or a game day or something and run an event where you want kids to play, that you should restrict it only to kids of a certain age group and not really allow older unless it's a parent or a guardian or someone who is capable of playing with kids. And you need to make that clear. So just using that as an example for how to, I put this all under simplify the rules, which is really like rules in air quotes of playing with the child and playing this event and having this playtime. So that's the first one. Number two, and even more important than number one, this is the most important thing, I think, in general in life, with everything you do, but also especially with wargaming with children, is the goal of what you're doing is not to teach the kid how to play a game. It's not to show how much you know. It's not to be like, I'm the expert, and I'm really cool, and I know better than you. It's not to say, look how cool my stuff is, how cool my models are, my terrain, my table. It's not to kind of impress anyone. It's not to win. It's not for make sure the kid wins. It's not to make sure that you win. The ultimate goal is to have fun. if you ensure that the child or children and you are having fun, because it's definitely possible for all of you to have fun, if you ensure that happens and you put your best foot forward for it, and you make sure that the kids are having fun, those kids will then come back time and time again. You can say to your kids, hey, do you want to play such and such a game? And if they remember having fun the last time you played, they're going to be more likely to want to play this time. And as long as you continue to have that fun and that positive reinforcement, they will have great, happy associations of wargaming, or whatever game you're playing, really, and happiness and joy and pleasure. And they're going to say, I like doing this. So that maybe, over the course of time, they will then say, well, I remember playing such and such with mom or with dad or uncle so-and-so or cousin Bobby or my friend Jan down the street or whatever. And then as time goes by, they'll be like, yeah, that was a lot of fun. I should do that again. And it may be years and years that go by as they grow up before they realize that. But it's really amazing to see what happens. And at the same time, it's basic science, right? This is going to seem completely unrelated. But let's say that you are going out to a restaurant and you are eating the food and it just tastes so delicious. It's like smooth and creamy or sweet or salty, whatever makes you happy. And you're eating it and you're like, oh, that is really good and that's so tasty and I wish I could have more of it. Well, the next time that you're thinking about going out to a restaurant, you might remember that meal you had and how enjoyable it was. And you might think, I want to go back to that restaurant because I want to have what I ate before. I want to have that enjoyable experience. Same exact thing with gaming. If you have a bad time playing a game, you're probably not going to want to play that game again. Or may not want to play any game ever. And what it boils down to, and there's been all sorts of studies on this, and I'm no expert by any means, but the studies have shown that what makes a lasting impression are both the beginning and the end. The middle, you can fudge or whatever, but if there's a strong positive response in the beginning, if you're enthusiastic, if you are cheerful and the kids remember having fun at the beginning of a game, and then if at the conclusion of it, there's happiness and joy, the overall memory of the event is more positive than if the middle was all sorts of fun and everything, but the beginning or the end were a little lackluster. So when you're playing with the kids, right, maybe it would be better to have things set up already. Instead of saying, well, Mary, I think you should come and help mommy or help daddy set up this game so we can play. No, you set it up. You have it ready. Make it look inviting and appealing and say, ooh, look how much fun this is. Sell it to them. Be like, hey, we're going to have so much fun today because this is such a great game. And look how fun it is in all the colors. It's going to be so wonderful. And you and I are just going to have such a good time together, spending special daddy and daughter time together playing this game. It's going to be so good. The kid's going to be like, ooh, daddy's really into this. Maybe I will like it too. And then when the game ends, it doesn't matter really whether you win or the kid wins. That doesn't matter. And if you need to fudge it a little bit to give the kid a little bit of extra help, that's not something I always suggest, especially as a child grows older. But if that's something you need to do to help boost the fun factor, I say do it. And end on that high note, because then the kid's going to be like, whoa, this was a lot of fun. I can't wait to play that again. Can we play it again right now, please? And that's what you're looking for. You're looking for that enthusiasm and excitement from them. If the kids are just there and they're looking bored, they're looking like they would rather do just about anything else. Do homework, go to sleep, clean the house for you. If they're looking like they could care less, you've already lost. And you need to act very quickly to turn things around. Doesn't matter what you have to do. And even if it means altering the rules to do things that the rules weren't intended to do, you do it. You make the event fun for them. And does this mean you sell your soul to the devil? No, you don't do that. You definitely have principles. And again, depends on the age group of kids. I'm thinking of younger kids with this, really, like 5-6-year-olds. But if you're having like a 9, a 10, or 12, a 14-year-old, you don't need to be saying, oh, look, I accidentally lost, or throwing the game. that's one of the worst things you can do, because if a kid realizes that you're just throwing the game for them, they're going to think that you don't have any faith in them, you don't have any trust in them, you think that they are incapable of having fun and of playing the game on their own. So you can't do that. You need to put up a good show, and like any good game master for a role-playing game will tell you, part of the reason why you have that screen, the game master screen, the dungeon master screen, is so that you can roll your dice or do whatever, and maybe you succeeded in what was going on. You were going to beat the player. But maybe for the sake of the game, for the sake of the fun for everyone, you want to have that roll be a loss. So you can roll behind your screen, no one can see. You'd be like, oh man, you got me. You beat the boss in this most heroic way, and you slayed the dragon, and your group wins, and all this cool stuff happens, even though you as Game Master rolled 2 sixes, which means that you were going to cause critical damage to the player and kill them, and that's not fun. But what would be fun is that epic win where, against all odds, the players were in that dungeon and they just slayed the dragon and they didn't think they could, but whoa, look what they did. Same kind of thing when you're playing with the kids, and you're doing it not to be like, oh, I want them to win, or not to be like, I want to win, because again, that places the focus and the goal on winning. When you need to place it on having fun. And that enjoyable and good experience, because it's bonding between you and your kids or family members or friends' kids or even at a convention, because chances are, if you're going to a game day or a convention, you're going to see the same people over and over and over again. In my limited experience of going to Huzzah and Havoc and Total Con, I see the same people going to each of them. There's that core group who's always there, and you can... You may not have talked to them last time, but you can recognize them and wave, say hi, or whatever. And a lot of wargamers now are having kids, because we're getting older, and we're bringing our kids to these things, right? So then our kids are wanting to play and stuff. And if our kids are playing in a game, and maybe we're nearby and we're watching or playing with them, and we see some other grown-up, someone who maybe we've known, or even just kind of associated with a little bit at conventions, and we see them playing a game with the kids in such a way that we don't like they're being cutthroat or whatever, that's going to alter our way that we react and interact with these other people. So if you're that person who doesn't have the kids or whatever, or your kids aren't with you and you're playing, you want to make sure that you're creating the bonds with the other Wargamers' kids. Not for like a weird kind of way, but because you're going to see them again, you're going to see their parents again, and maybe by having that bond with these kids at a game, their parents would be like, oh, so-and-so is a lot of cool and they're great to play with. Maybe I'll play a game with them, too. Maybe, oh, look, they're playing an event. I want to go sign up, too. And who knows, you can make friends this way. I've seen where, just from running events at TotalCon, there have been kids, and I say kids, but they're like middle teenagers, and they've come back year after year after year because they recognize me. They remember having fun at the event, and they play, and they see me around, and they wave. It's wonderful to get that, to see that the kids are excited and want to continue with this. And all of this, of course, this is all focused on children. But this also plays heavily into the whole graying of the hobby, which is a topic I know I will do a show on at some point. But I will also touch a little bit when I have special guest Jesper Ortiz coming on. He's going to be talking about the Great Wargaming Survey, and that'll be a few episodes from now. So I know one of the things in there were some questions asked about these kind of topics, like the grading of the hobby. So we'll cover those then. But this influences that, because if kids aren't having fun, if we're not able to sell wargaming to the next generation, what's going to happen? Some kids will kind of find it on their own, but most will not. And eventually, the nightmare scenario is that wargaming dies out. And will it really die out? I don't think it really will, like ever. But it could be heavily diminished. And it's a niche area right now. It's very limited. It's not like, oh, I don't know, video games or something, right? It's much smaller and concentrated than that. And in some ways, it's like a village because certain names of manufacturers and people and game designers keep on popping up. And eventually, there'll be fewer and fewer and fewer and fewer of them. It's just something to keep in mind. So moving on, the third item in my list is durability. Durability is extremely important. But what kind of durability? I'm not talking about are rules durable, although important. Like, can you buy a set of rules and 40 years down the road, can your kid pull them out and be like, oh, these are really cool, I still want to play them. You know, I mean, that's kind of... What I'm talking about is the items that you use when you play. Kids are hard on stuff. They're maybe a little clumsy. They might not realize their own strength. And accidents happen. The kids don't mean to do anything evil or malicious with the toys that you're using. And let's face it, the stuff we're using, we can call it whatever we want. They're toys. They're toy soldiers, they're toy trains, toy tanks, toy trees, toy tables. They are toys that are socially acceptable for grown-ups like us, but they're toys. And if you keep that mindset about it, it of course makes it clearer to see, whoa, kids should be doing this kind of stuff. And two, that we need to have stuff that is good for kids to use. If you have kids, or you ever have just been into a toy store and you've seen how toys are made, especially for the younger kids, they basically make it so safe so that no matter what the kid does to it, the kid's not going to get hurt, the toy's not really going to get hurt, it might get beat up a little bit. The other day, my wife and I, we were looking at a baby store for all sorts of like stuff for babies, cribs and all sorts of things, but it had toys in it. And toys for like really small infants and toddlers, they're almost indestructible. But most toys for wargamers are not. You happen to drop a toy soldier on the floor, chances are he might break, might need to be re-glued, and that's okay. Some toys are more forgiving, and some wargaming toys are also more forgiving. So you want to use stuff that either one, if it happens to break or it's not going to be in that pristine condition or too hard to repair, maybe you don't use that with the kids. Or you get stuff that's going to be able to deal with that longer. I would say a lot of plastics are going to be really good. Plastic toy soldiers in particular. And don't get the expensive stuff like the Perrys or whatever. They're gorgeous, right? Absolutely fantastic. But for kids, not so much, especially because of those small pieces. Instead of getting a multi-part kit, get a single-use thing. Armies in plastic, 54mm. Fantastic. Anything 54mm is great for kids because it's bigger, easier for them to grab. They can move it around. It can toss it. It's going to last. You can't really do a whole lot that's going to damage or break it. And if you do, it's affordable enough that you can replace it easy as pie. No one's going to cry about it. There's no worry. If the kid accidentally steps on it and the guy's head comes off, you're not going to feel like, oh, why did you do that? And then cause the kid to cry. Bad response, right? And this also kind of holds true for conventions in general, which is, I talked about this kind of stuff a little bit in that episode I did, talking about how to run a successful event at a con. You want to use stuff that's going to last. So if you have that prize figure that's out of print, and these trees that great-grandpa made for you or whatever, that just mean the world to you, maybe those are a look-don't-touch situation, and therefore not ideal for introducing kids to gaming. So I'm going to transition from the list, but before I do, let me just recap it for all of you. The first thing on the list is to simplify the rules. Make them appropriate for kids, their interests, their abilities. Number two, and most importantly, the goal is always fun. Are the kids having fun? If the answer is no, you've lost the game over. But you can always do what you need to save it, to make it fun. But you're going to act fast. And then number three, durability is important. Durability of the stuff you use, the toys, the terrain, the models, the dice, all that kind of stuff. The books that the rules are in. You want to use things that are going to last. That if something happens to it, because accidents do happen, that it's not going to be the end of the world. Okay, so now I'm going to transition into some more examples. And there's someone who's just fantastic when it comes to gaming with kids. His name is Mike Payne, and he is just about the epitome of what it means to be a superstar GM and ideal person for running games with kids. He likes to run games at game days and conventions in New England. And when he runs them, they're pulp games set in his fictional China called Hanghai. He puts these in so that you'll see them in the listing as games for children and for adults who can play with kids. Very, very important. I touched on that a little bit earlier in this episode. He wants to encourage kids to wargame because he knows the importance of it to kids, for their fun, for their development, for their interest, and also to the hobby, because we are, I firmly believe, although I don't have any scientific proof, but I firmly believe wargaming is graying. Eventually, when the wizened old wargamers slowly cease to be on this earth, we're going to come to a precipice, and things go very badly. So he knows this, and he understands it, and he wants kids to have fun wargaming. So what does he do? He does a lot of things, and he does, like, everything right. You can tell Mike has lots of experience doing this, and that he's really been able to focus and get things down to the essence. So here's a few things that he does that I really picked up on. He makes his games fun to look at. So if you're walking around at the game day event, wherever it is, you're walking around the convention hall, and you happen to see his table, first thing you notice is the size of it. It's huge. It's one of the largest tables around. He uses like 3 or 4 6-foot by 4-foot tables, maybe more. I could be wrong. I think it's like 10 to, it can't be 10. It's like 15 to 20 feet long, I think, and standard width. He has about half to 3/4 of the table full of water. And on the water, not real water, but, you know, like blue felt and that kind of stuff, like pretend wargamer water. And on that water are ships. He's scratch-built them. He's built models and modified them stuff. But all sorts of different, pretty, painted, and colorful ships. These are things that he knows are either going to be durable, or he doesn't really mind if little hands accidentally do something to it. He doesn't want kids, you know, Hail Marying them across the convention hall. But stuff happens. And he understands that. And then on the other half, he has a gigantic and beautiful land terrain. There's a village with these wonderful buildings. Some of them you can remove the roofs from. Intricately detailed, beautifully painted. A wonderful hill that's sculpted. On top of it is a fort that just looks gorgeous. Out in the water, he has a skull mountain. And you can take the top off the skull. There's something hidden inside. I won't tell you in case you play in a game of his. And you can see it there. And he has this beautiful running story that's lasted all these years. And it keeps on getting added on to. Speaking of adding on to, he's always introducing something new to his game. A new model, a new mechanic, a new something. His games have lots of really cool pieces, but it's not too much to be overwhelming. He allows everyone to kind of pick a character, a model, and that's who you are. And there's different ways in which he does this. He uses a deck of cards or a few decks of cards to get turn order going, so that way there's no waiting for, like, oh, is it your turn? Is it my turn? He just calls out, oh, it's so-and-so's turn, and he calls you by your character name. Because each of his models, each of his miniatures has a character name. Dr. Doom, and Professor Evil, and whoever. I can't remember all the names, but there's a lot of them. And you just go through, and he has a really simplified mechanic. You use D10s, and that allows you to move. It allows you for chances to attack and shoot and all sorts of stuff. His world is an open world. You can do just about anything you would ever want to do. Are you going to always be able to? No, but you can always attempt. So anything could happen, and sometimes it does. If you want to climb on board a ship and use the main deck gun to go shooting at the mountain, I don't know why you would, but if you could, and for a kid, that might be a lot of fun. I just want to shoot that gun because that's going to be really cool. You can do that as a kid. And he'll say, go ahead and try. And what you roll? And he'll be like, yeah, oh, you can, or maybe you can't. And you can always try to convince him of stuff. And you say, well, I want to do this. This is what my goal is, what I'm hoping to achieve. And he'll be like, okay. And he'll think about it. Be like, you know, I think you might be able to do that. And he'll allow you to explain to him and convince him. And kids can be like, I want to get my guy on a horse and run all the way up. Or look at that cool car. And can I get in there and just drive around? And his goal is that everyone is having fun. That it's fun to look at, fun to play in. Not so much who's winning. And when you play in his games, the game always goes longer than the time you have. So eventually it kind of ends. And there's no winner or loser. Everyone has fun. You also need to have a sense of humor because, first of all, it is a pulp-style game, which is really important because that allows you some freedom from historical restrictions. If you're going to do a historical war game, I would suggest maybe do What If or modify it to make it a little easier so that way you're not as stringent. But he has that by doing a pulp-style game. All sorts of crazy things happen. Stuff blows up. Things go awry. You just don't know what's going to happen. Players are like, I want to do this because this is going to be really funny. He's like, okay, go for it. Give it a try. Because he wants people to use their imagination. Kids are so creative. They have great imaginations. You give them the opportunity, and they're going to come up with things you never imagined. You give them a piece of paper, just plain blank piece of paper, and to you and me, it's a piece of paper. To them, it is the world. They can make that piece of paper be and do anything. It's beautiful to see. And Mike understands this. So imagine that piece of paper can be the world. Imagine what some painted models and a beautiful table are. That's like the whole universe. That's the Milky Way and then some. That is everything in existence. Anything that is, was, could be, no matter how strange, bizarre, whatever. Kids do fantastic things at his games. I was actually talking to Mike the other day, and I was telling him how I would be doing this episode and how important he is to it. I told him that he needs to keep on wargaming like forever, that he can never die, because when my kids are old enough, I want them to play in his games. I play in his games. Whenever I see his name on a listing for a game day or an event or a convention, whatever, I sign up. I'm in my 30s. I have a blast at his game. It is one of the highlights of every single convention I go to see him say hi, play in his game. It's fantastic. And I'm not the only one. There's a lot of grown-ups who like to play in them. And he will only accept people who can and are willing and are happy to play with kids. Because his focus is on the kids. It's not on people like you and me. It's on the children. So it's clear that Mike has his priorities straight. Well, now that I'm stepping off my soapbox, I want to move on to mailbag. I enjoy the mailbag section of the show. But before I do, I just want to say I hope you found this useful. I am no expert on this. I've never written books on wargaming with children. I don't have kids just yet. There's a baby on the way. I remember what it's like to be a kid and playing these kind of games with grown-ups. I know what it's like to be a grown-up and go and play these types of games where kids are playing. I know what it's like to see people doing this kind of stuff and to absorb that information. I know what works for me and what works for other people. And things might work for you, but maybe not your buddy. And that's okay. The importance is that you can take these ideas and then take the parts of them that work for you and your family and the kids and throw away the rest. That's what's going to make it a success for you. But really, no matter what, fun. Remember fun. Fun is the goal. It's the most important thing. You need to have fun. Because if you're not having fun, then why are we doing any of this? It doesn't matter. It's a game. These are toys. We are meant to be having fun. And so are the kids. The kids need to have that fun. So mailbag. First of all, I want to thank all of you. I've received many, many congratulations on the BB announcement. And if you didn't happen to hear that announcement, like I said at the top of the show, the BB is due to come beginning of February 2015, maybe end of January. We're not quite sure. But I made that announcement at the end of episode 119. I would suggest you go and listen to that episode if you had missed it. It's a great episode. Henry Hyde is fantastic as always. I'll have a link to that episode in the show notes for this show. And then I received an email, which I also mentioned at the top of the episode. So this email I got a few weeks ago, right before I was recording, well, not recording, right before I was getting ready to release episode 119. So let me read it to you. So this email came from listener Shay, and they get Wargaming Recon through Troll in the Corner. I release Wargaming Recon through a variety of places. You can find it on iTunes, it's on Stitcher Radio, on the Wargaming Recon website, wargamingrecon.com, and also on the Troll in the Corner podcast network website, trollitc.com. And that's how they found the show. So they sent me this email. They said, "Hi, Jonathan. I am looking for World War II wargaming groups local to Boston. I will drive up to an hour that my 11-year-old son can participate in. He is obsessed with the hobby and has had a great time at Huzzah and other events. He also plays with Boston-trained bands one Saturday a month, but it's not enough for him. And I am wondering if you know of any groups that play more regularly. Thank you very much." So I responded to Shay, and I said, oh, and I had all sorts of information. First of all, Shay, thank you very much for writing in. But I sent all sorts of information, and then we had this multiple email communication that was really nice. And one of the things that Shay said, I want to highlight, because I think it's very, very important. They said, quote, "I do hear a similar refrain from other guys when I worry that they might not want a kid participating in their game. Who will the next generation be if we don't help them get interested in wargaming and make it fun? It's kind of sad." I completely agree with Shay. And I want to end the mailbag section with one thing that I ended an email to Shay with. In that email, I concluded and I said, quote, before I end this email, there's one tidbit you should know to keep in the back of your head. Whenever you see the name Mike Payne as a GM at a game day or a convention, you need to sign your son up to play in Mike's games. He is a superstar GM, and he's fantastic with kids. He always says that his games are for kids and adults who will play nicely with kids. Whenever I see his name at a con, I immediately sign up for his stuff. Plus, he's an all-around nice guy. And that's the dead truth. So, Mike, if you're listening to this, and I know you're a listener, I might be embarrassing you, and I'm sorry, I don't mean to, but it's true. You are fantastic. And now, I mean, it's kind of tied in with mailbag, but not really. Just a couple things on Facebook I wanted to share with all of you. Over on our Facebook page, which you can find by going to wargamingforums.com/Facebook, frequent guest Aaron Boston said, quote, hearing Mr. Hyde talk on your show always seems to define everything I like about tabletop miniature gaming. He was, of course, referring to episode 119, link in the show notes, don't worry. And then listener Dave shared some photos of a 2mm, that's really, really small, isn't it? 2mm portable wargaming setup he has. There are a lot of comments in response to it. And another listener Michael, responded to listener Dave's photos by saying, the more I look at these, the more I consider dropping to 2mm. Blast you guys! So, I never thought I would ever want to wargame in something so small, but there's definitely that appeal. Because you can put the whole battle, the whole tabletop in a box. Something really small, bring it with you, it's very portable. You can play, it's easy, and I'm sure it's a blast. I have to say, Dave's 2mm wargaming setup is gorgeous. So if you follow us on Facebook, and if you don't, please do like our page and go and see, you can find the photos. It's beautiful. So that is the mailbag section of this episode. I have a few announcements for all of you. So over the years, and I've been doing this since 2006, I've been very blessed to have a variety of guests. And I'd love to know who you want me to have on the show. So if you have names, contact information, or you can provide an introduction, it's even better. But just get in touch with me. I'll have contact information at the end of this episode. But get in touch. Tell me who you'd like to have on the show. I'd love to hear from you. Doesn't matter. Whoever you want to have on the show, you tell me. And I'll do my best to try to get these people on if they would be a good fit. And like I said, if you have contact information for them or you can provide an introduction, even better. If you're interested in seeing a photo collage of some of the guests, I have a link in the show notes that you'll be able to click onto. It'll take you to our Facebook page, and I put this photo collage up of just a few of the guests, not all of them. I don't have photos of everyone, but just some of the guests. And speaking of guests, I have a couple upcoming guests to share with you. So for episode 122, Stephen McLaughlin, who is the head honcho, head podcaster of WWPD News from the Front, he will be on. That is the premier Flames of War podcast out there. Stephen is a great guy. He worked for Battlefront for a little while, and not anymore. But he's just fantastic. He knows all sorts of stuff, so it'd be great to have him on the show again. He was on several years back. I didn't get to speak with him. A former co-host of mine did. So this would be a lot of fun for me to actually have a chance to speak with him for the first time here on the show, and I think all of you will enjoy that. And then episode 123 will be very interesting because Mr. Jasper Ortiz is going to come back on the show. He is the managing editor of publications for Karansari Publications, or publishers, really. They make Wargame Soldiers and Strategy, Ancient Warfare, and Medieval Warfare magazines. But he's not going to come on to talk about any of those. Not directly, anyway. He's coming on because he's going to talk about the Great Wargaming Survey, which is a survey that they ran for a while. I think they got almost 800 or 900 responses, I think. I might be off, or maybe more. I'm probably off. Ignore the number. Anyway, they got tons of people responding. So he's going to discuss some of the results here on the show. That'll be a longer episode. I'm definitely sure of that. And speaking of episodes, if you are interested to see what upcoming show topics, potential guests, and release dates are, you want to check out our episode guide. Head over to wargamingforums.com/episode guide, and that'll give you the list of all the kind of stuff that's coming up. So, for example, I mentioned these coming up guests, and the next episode, episode 121, I'm going to talk about the Hobby Bunker Game Day 2014. But then later on in the year, I can tell you that November 10th, for example, I'm going to do my annual holiday gift guide. The final new episode of the year will be December 8th, where I look back on 2014. I have some other guests kind of in the works that I don't want to tell you just yet, just until I nail that stuff down. And then I'm going to have the show on break, where there'll be two best of episodes. One on December 22nd, which is my birthday, and the other on January 5th. I will check those out and pick two best of episodes from this podcasting year and reshare them with everyone because maybe you missed it. And then the 2015 podcast season will begin on January 19th. That'll be episode 130. And of course, at that point, we're going to be getting closer to when my wife will be having the baby. And I haven't worked it all out now. Obviously, it's going to impact the show in some way. I haven't figured out how. Going to hope and do my best to keep things going as regular as possible. The show's not going to die. It's going to keep coming out, but I might have to make it a little shorter. I don't want to go to just once a month, but I'm hoping to still do twice a month with maybe a little shorter episodes of 20 minutes to half an hour. I hate to cut back, but I think I might need to. So it's just something I'm thinking about, but don't be surprised if when the baby comes right around there, if episodes are due out, that I'm like, sorry, there's nothing going on. I think you would all understand that. So, let's see. We got iTunes, right? A lot of you, I know, like to listen directly from the website, wargamingforums.com. But the even better way, the best way, really, to get the show would be to subscribe via iTunes. Why is that? Well, first of all, if you subscribe, you get the episodes automatically when they come out. They just show up. It's great. Comes into your iTunes account, and you can listen to them and download them and all sorts of stuff and work on your devices and everything. It's just fantastic. And then also, if you use iTunes, and if you don't, I would suggest that you do, but if you use iTunes, you can do something really cool for us, which helps not just me in the show, but helps you and everyone in an odd way. You can rate and, even more importantly, review the show. Why would you want to do this? Okay. Let's pretend that you are looking for a wargaming podcast on iTunes, and you go into iTunes because it is the number one podcast directory in the world. It's where everyone goes first to look for podcasts. And you're trying to figure out which podcast to listen to, and you see some that are about wargaming, and you don't know which one to try. But one of them happens to have a bunch of reviews, they look pretty cool, has some nice ratings, and you read those reviews, and you're like, oh, this sounds interesting, these people like it, so maybe I'll like it. You're going to try that one that has the reviews. The one that doesn't have the reviews or doesn't have as many, you're probably not going to try. So when you leave a review, not only are you helping other people, potential listeners, to see that and give the show a try, thereby growing the hobby, very important, right? But then also, I get to find out through the magic of the internet that you left a review. I can see what the review is, and then I will thank you here on the show. So I actually have a couple reviews I want to share. First of all, I want to say that to date, there have been 10 ratings. I want to thank everyone for that. We have an average score of 4.3 stars out of 5 stars. So give yourselves a round of applause for taking the time to review and rate the show. And here are a couple reviews that I need to share. The first is from Steve B. from Canada. They left a 4-star review titled, "Great Stuff." Their review said, quote, "A great podcast full of a variety of good quality information." So, Steve, thank you very much for taking the time to leave that review. I really appreciate it. And I want to thank you for leaving us your fantastic and honest and helpful review. And then also, one more review to share with all of you. Josh Weaver from the UK left a 4-star review titled, "Cheers." Their review said, quote, "Thanks for an excellent podcast. I've only recently discovered the podcast, and I've been pleasantly surprised by the quality of the cast and the dedication to improving that quality. All in all, a great podcast. Happy gaming." So thank you, Josh Weaver, for your 4-star review. As you can tell, no matter where in the world you are, you can get into iTunes and you can leave a review. You could be in Afghanistan. You could be in Malaysia. You could be in Australia, which I know is very popular. You could be in Brazil. You could be any of these places, the Netherlands, wherever, and leave a review. And I would encourage you to do so. So if you listen to us via iTunes, please leave a review. Help others find the show. You can do that at wargamingforums.com/iTunes. Try to make it easy for you guys. So at this point, I want to thank all of you for listening to this episode and to say that I really appreciate you taking the time out of your busy schedules to tune in. I know that a lot of you like to listen during your commutes or when you're at the gym or during lunch breaks and that kind of stuff. So it may not always be easy to remember this web address or that thing or to take notes if you want to write down stuff. Don't worry, I got you covered. No matter what is going on, no matter how busy you are, remember this one web address. It'll bring you to the show notes that has content I shared and links to things. Remember, wargamingforums.com/WR120. That's wargamingforums.com/WR120. That'll bring you to the show notes. You can find what I talked about with Wargaming with Kids, links to things, all that kind of stuff. You'll never have to worry about remembering anything else because it'll be right there and you'll be golden. That one web address. So thank you again for taking the time to listen. You know, you can get in touch with me. We're on Facebook. You can send me an email, cwfgamecast@wargamingforums.com, on Twitter. And then those show notes, which will have links to all of that. So as always, you know the deal. You guys are busy, I'm busy, but no matter how busy we are, no matter what's going on in the world, you need to keep on gaming. Are you always on the go? Why not take Wargaming Recon with you? If you use an app like Pocket Cast, you can listen to your favorite episodes of Wargaming Recon and all of the other podcasts that you know and love. Or you can always stream and download the latest episode of Wargaming Recon by heading on over to the show notes for that episode.
Hey there, this is Ben Gerber from Troll in the Corner, and I'd like to invite you to listen to my podcast, Indie Talks. Indie Talks is a discussion about independent publishing, where we take a look at indie games, the people who write them, and the people who play them. We're going to branch a little farther afield as well and talk to some independent television and movie stars and creators, as well as crafters, all of who are related to gaming in some way, shape, or form. So please join me on the Troll in the Corner Network at trollitc.com and give Indie Talks a listen.
Geeks Explicitly, new episodes coming at you every Thursday, talking about geek life. If you don't listen to Geeks Explicitly, then only at trollitc.com.
This is Andreas, Apprentice of the White Order. I would like to invite you to listen to my letters, a humble collection of my observations of the various beautiful and very, very dangerous creatures that inhabit my world. I hope you enjoy it as part of the Monsters of the Shattered World on Troll in the Corner at trollitc.com.
Wargaming Recon is a proud member of the Troll in the Corner podcast network. Visit www.trollitc.com for more information. This recording is released under a Creative Commons Attribution Non-Commercial Share Alike 3.0 license. Look for Wargaming Recon online at www.wargamingforums.com. We're also on Twitter, Facebook, and Stitcher Radio. You can learn more about this episode by reading the show notes on our blog. Many thanks to Andrew and Court for inspiring the show's name. Thank you for listening, and keep on gaming. Wargaming Recon is proudly sponsored by 127games.com, home of the cheapest Access and Allies miniatures. Find them at 12-7-games.com.